Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
making of proteins by cells. Yep, cells are the little things which are alive. They can be germs and stuff like that. It can be viruses, but you make, I think you make 27 trillion cells make up your body. So there's a fair amount of you. So there's a million is a trillion cells make up you. And inside each of those cells are busy consuming oxygen and sugar and going through a process to make stuff it needs. And the stuff it needs is obviously some oils. Your skin feels greasy. Some oils, some other strange chemicals, little bits and pieces of chemicals, and protein machines. We're going to get in and understand this time about how proteins are made. So the cells make the protein. And how they do it is quite a fascinating thing. So proteins are just chemicals. They're special sort of magical chemicals made out of 20 types of basic building blocks. If you imagine you receive a Lego kit, but the Lego kit of proteins only contain 20 types of blocks, and those blocks have a part which is common to all of them, and a dangly bit which is different, which makes each block different. So the connection bit, which is common to all of them, is the amino acid bit, and there's a bit hanging off them which is the stuff which gives each little bit a quality, each block, building block quality. And of course, as you can build many different shapes and things with Lego, so too you can build with proteins many different sorts of shapes. So of the base things, there's base chemicals that your cell produces. These are just little actual molecules. It decides it gets a few, and I'll put out a molecule. So you might recognize those molecules as a smell or or some sort of chemical associated with it. An oil or a fat. Cells, obviously, you get fat. A cow eats grass. There's no fat in that, but the cow itself gets fat. So the cow has to make all its cow bits. So you've got to make your bits. And your bit is your basically fats and sugars and all the yummy bits which makes you really yummy to eat. It's all because your individual cells are making little bits and pieces of it. And the thing which is the really tricky, intelligent bit is the protein, because the protein can do several things. It can act as a sort of a messenger. It can act as a piece of furniture in the cell, or a structural wall in the cell, or something which opens and which sort of creates a roadway in your cell. And then the proteins, so these proteins can be little messenger proteins, a little bit. Then the protein can actually be a quantum mechanical machine, which is it's a bit of a cross between a mechanical machine and a chemical machine. And these proteins can be coiled up, and these proteins act as chemical factories, which call enzymes, which mean that your cell controls chemical reactions around it. So you can press levers, turn on the enzymes, and the enzymes will work within a temperature range by taking a sort of balance of energy from the environment, jiggle around and actually knock the chemicals into shape that you want. So enzymes are these fantastic protein machines. And then your proteins can actually be like globulins. They can be just sort of like a coffee table or sort of a vase to hold certain chemicals of certain positions, make them all active, ready to do their job. So, and those sort of proteins as chemical holders tend to be globulin. So they tend to do certain chemical jobs. So one of the things they can do is they can make chemicals or convert chemicals. Like here's an enzyme protein being pushed out by your mouth right now in your saliva, and it's one which attacks starch and turns it into digestible glucose, and that will operate within a certain temperature range. And the reason that is that there's a form of sort of quantum mechanical energy channeling in it, in which it forms at a certain temperature, forms weak bonds with water and other things. And when the chemical of choice comes up that it wants to actually dump its energy on, it can actually do its bit and conserve energy, and things like momentum and motion and things like that, by actually, when it attacks the chemical, it releases some of the other, shakes off some of the dust, the water dust, if you like, on it. So that's a beautiful thing that proteins are made. But the thing is that proteins themselves are not made by other proteins. Da-na-na-na. There is an intermediary between the DNA and the protein, and that is called RNA. So what happens is the DNA, proteins themselves, machines, tend the DNA, which is not a protein. The DNA has a backbone, a double helix, and each helix is made of a backbone of a phosphate, sort of like a link, and that links two sugars together, and on each sugar, so that's from it's like a link in a chain, the phosphates, and one of the links in the chain, so it goes phosphate sugar, phosphate sugar, phosphate sugar, and each sugar is attached a something called a nitrogenous base, and which is, if you'd like, a sort of similar to a flattened dinner plate of molecules. So normally, if you have your make up a series of molecules, if you just say ask someone to make up some molecules in a from a molecular kit, these are the little plastic balls and the bonds, and put them together, what would happen is what they'd move would be flexible. You'd be able to rotate one bond and then rotate the other. It's only when it's in a flat section like that they're inflexible and they can't be moved. And when they're inflexible, and then with some sort of, if you like, Velcro bits of it, there's three Velcro bases and two Velcro bases. And the two Velcro bases don't go together, and the bases are in pairs. And so the actual structuring, each piece of sugar doesn't care what base is on it, but the bases themselves form a code, and each code represents a particular, three code letters represent a individual amino acid. So if I have if I've got something 20 amino acids long, for something which is a set of amino acids, a string of amino acids, which we're going to talk about a bit later on, that's made by, that would require a code of 60 bases. 60 really, the least you could do it is I think it's probably a 66, because you need a base to start and a base to stop, and it comes along. What it does is it does a whole heap of things, but the information is transferred, removed off the DNA via a special mechanism, which I'll talk in a few minutes, or for you it'll be instantaneously. For me, I've just got to duck in and see someone, and then I'll be with you in a sec. Keep on listening. Interestingly, I've just had a pause here, and one of the things I thought I will do is, when there is a break here, rather than actually try and stretch my memory and start off where I'm coming from, is this a point for you as a reader and myself to recap where we're at. So you can fast forward if you're in a podcast past moment. But we're here saying, how do I make stuff? How do I make myself? And when you look at yourself, I'm a lot of sugar, if you're sweet, a lot of fat, a lot of water, a lot of membranes, and a lot of proteins. And there's a few other bits and pieces in there, but proteins are the major thing that we're going to have to look at of how we're made. And so we're looking at how you make a protein. And just telling you that a protein is made out of these really cute little building blocks of 20 amino acids only. And if you go around a class of people and say, think of a number 1 to 20, and you just get their numbers in random, that is a particular type of protein. So out of the 20 amino acids, it's possible to build it of any length. And you can get literally a mind-bogglingly huge combinations of it. It's sort of like each one is a roll of 20-sided dice. It doesn't take you very far to get trillions and trillions of possibilities of it. And so these proteins are the essential. It's sort of like if you can imagine a Lego block, there's basically a side to it with little knobs and a little side which receives it, and it just plugs together. And imagine 20 different colours. Rather than 20 different colours, they're basically a block with different shapes attached to it. And those shapes can do things. They give sort of chemical properties of it, depending on the strength of the different shapes. And produce these fantastic things called proteins. Now, one of the things I'm telling you about proteins is that they can do things. They can be things. They can be. If you can actually write a protein that folds up and it's a little chair, or it's like an origami. It's sort of like linear origami. You can actually make anything you want out of a protein. Different shape. It's not just a normal chair. It's a chair which sits on oil, or a chair which sits on water, or a chair which moves, and in fact, a chair which walks. You can sit on the chair, and the chair walks, but it walks by actually feeding off a chemical called ATP. So the ATP gets charged up, and this charged up chemical comes along, hits your magic protein chair, and you can imagine sitting on the chair, and it begins to walk. And so this is the entire thing that the fats and these chemicals and all this type of stuff get built by proteins, and the proteins operate on the sugar and convert sugar into the cell food, and the cell food goes around activating the proteins, and the proteins move and activate the production of stuff. So you can imagine it's sort of like a kitchen where the workers there, in order to operate, they produce some of their own gear to actually operate there. They produce the knives, or I don't know, the plates and stuff like that, and then they produce excess. And one of the things that the proteins can do is they can make long tubes, linear structures inside your cell. They can make scaffolds to hold liquid layers, all these fantastic things out of proteins. The proteins themselves can vibrate. So if you imagine there, each link in them can rotate if they're allowed to. So it's like these magic Lego blocks where you've got on one side a shape hanging off them. But rather than being fixed, like when you plug in a Lego box, they can actually spin. And so I think what I rather like, in terms of the Lego which is closest to it, is the toy Bionicle. So if you've ever had a kid, they will have bought or had given to them Bionicles, and they've played with the Bionicles, those rotating links. And so, unlike Lego, which you, Lego blocks, which you put one after the other, forms a staple tower, if you link a whole lot of toa arms and legs together, infinitely you can make a real bendy sort of snake, and that's what a protein is. All proteins are, are linear strings which are folded up as origami. Now, being them is, if you can imagine them ringing when they're hit, they also chime, and they respond to their environment, and they bind with things partially at a certain temperature. And so what I was saying before is that these special proteins which act as play a special function by actually being so small they actually grab atoms and change them and promote chemical reactions. Those are called enzymes. They're really important things because they actually go up to molecules, grab onto them, structure them, move them around, and then at a critical time they can, water or other particles can visit them, have an energy transfer, and the energy transfer can create a chemical reaction. And you need these chemical reactions yourself. One example of enzymes is the enzymes in your saliva, which break up your croissant, the starch in your croissant, and turn that into sugar very quickly. So as you chew it up, what you chew as starch is converted into sugar before it reaches your stomach. So these enzymes work at certain temperature, pH ranges. pH range tells you that an enzyme is really sensitive to hydrogen bonds around it, and it's forming and breaking hydrogen bonds in the same time in a process of very elegantly doing this as it tweaks. So if you know someone who's, say, very good at opening a wine bottle, someone who's incompetent will be there with pliers really pulling it out. Someone who knows exactly how to do it, how to feel it, can just, it's one fluid motion. And that happens with the enzymes. And so basically, enzymes, the proteins are there, and actually they create all the chemicals around the, I suppose, the urea, the fats and other things. They actually build up the actual things atom by atom. So proteins are a class of actual structures to the cell that use to support and shape things, to find where things are. They're a series of machines that are that operate on chemicals. They're atom machines, atom factory machines. So it's something that you could not imagine. We build huge chemical factories with pipes going everywhere. These ones actually clamp onto individual atoms and molecules and move them around. It's the most amazing thing. We've had about 4 billion years, 3.5 billion years to get this absolutely right. So this is a fantastic thing, but it's billions of years work, and billions of creatures who have tried out different mechanisms, and what often happens in the same mechanism, it may have half a dozen shots at it, and if one's slightly better, it grows on, and natural selection will actually weed that slightly improved version out. And besides that, there's other things, mechanical things that your proteins with basically bionicles, and that if you can imagine, a protein is like a bionicle toy which can be made to come to life. Now, rather than you coming in and activating it, it's activated by charges around it, and the charges around it are ferried to it by something called adenine triphosphate. So this is basically a bit of a base which has had a phosphate link, three phosphate links in a row linked to it, and how that is folded and energized when it binds to a protein, it puts charge on, and the charge flows through the protein, making parts of the protein repel each other, and actually makes the protein change shape. A key example of that, this is the walking twin leg protein. Oh, well, there's a twin leg protein, which are the two legs on a set of hips, and they walk around your cell as nanobots carrying big bags of chemicals. So what happens is there's a bag and of chemicals, and proteins which are required are actually manufactured and stuck in with hooks on top of the through the bag. So you get this big bag and with little protein hooks on sitting through the outside layer, and then a pair of these protein legs get stuck to the bag and motor along, carry the bag of chemicals around the cell. So it's like this enormous Amazon storage super factories. So cells are pretty amazing things, and proteins are key things, but proteins aren't the only machines. The one thing proteins can't make are proteins themselves. So the protein uses something from the DNA, which I talked about before, called RNA. So the DNA is the blueprint, or the mold, and RNA molds itself in a particular pattern off the DNA, and this is done by actually proteins. So proteins get the DNA, and from the DNA make RNA. And the RNA goes into three different things. So this, you can imagine this RNA, or a protein, is just a sequence of 20 amino acids in a row. A RNA machine is analogous to a protein, but it's much more bulky. So for where a protein just basically has a minimum backbone and maximum chemical hanging off it, a RNA is slightly different. Its backbone is quite bulky. So you can imagine RNA is a huge sort of dinosaur thing, sort of like if RNA is like Duplo box and Lego is like basically Duplo blocks, so a very big background, backbone. The backbone consists of phosphate, sugar, ribose sugar, and a base, one of the four bases which go on it. And so essentially RNA, whereas a protein can have 20 alternatives per link, RNA can have four alternatives for links. But nonetheless, with four, it's sort of like a primitive protein. So you can imagine RNA is probably considered a primitive protein. RNA is, I think it's UTAC rather than A. Oh. Well, I have to really think about this. There's a U in there, I can't quite remember. And this is the point of this thing, is to actually really, really stress myself in terms of trying to produce sufficient podcasts and produce across. But this RNA, if you can imagine, like, is like Duplo. It's sort of very large and very big. And it is rather fortunate. So you can imagine the RNA being produced in the tangle of DNA. Fortunately, the RNA and DNA repel each other. And so rather than actually tangling up like a rope in a drawer, it's sort of like a springy rope, which has a force field around it and stops itself tangling. And it also means that if deep in the DNA you produce a copy of an area, the proteins get in, rip apart and produce script piece of RNA, that RNA is repelled and actually leaves the nucleus area. So the nucleus is sort of like a big shopping bag with pores in it, but rather than being space with a string at the bottom. The DNA string, is repulsive and actually extends, creates a tension inside that bag, pulling out, making your nucleus very spherical and tightly bound. And then into it you pump chemicals, RNA chemicals, to make RNA. So RNA precursors get pumped and pushed into this bag, and out of this magic bag squirts out RNA, which is been copied and produced by inside the nucleus. So this is a intermediate discussion where I'll try and actually communicate this across. It may be confusing, but I'll get there. If this podcast isn't good and the next one isn't good, the one after that might be a little bit better, and I'll eventually get them. So you've got your RNA being pumped out, and there are actually three types of RNA. The RNA is the same type, but what it does is uniquely different. There's RNA, which is just a copy of DNA strung out, which is the code for making up the individual proteins, which are the machines, blah, blah, blah. It's all like a circle. It's like very hard to read the book because characters which are introduced in chapter 5 have actually done work to enable chapter 1 to succeed. So it's hard to read it as a linear book because things move around all the place. But your RNA contains information, and then it forms basically two types of machine. It actually, the RNA produces is the basic protein making machine. And it's a protein making machine, it's called rRNA. Ribosome. Zome means actually a useful device. That's the rRNA. And this device operates by reading mRNA, which is just long flat pieces of RNA which go inside it, and it operates. It's a bit like an old dynamo machine. If you had a dyno taper, it actually moves different letters around and actually selects what it does, and it stitches together your protein. And so into this machine goes three things, and out comes three things go in and three things go out. So this is obviously one machine, three in, three out. So see if you can actually do this. So it goes in to the machine is really two things, but into the machine is the program code. Into this machine, RNA has a program code of linear mRNA into it, and fed into it is one object, which is tRNA, which is called transport RNA, which carries with it a little amino acid. Is that okay? So that's really two things in, but I've counted one of them, the tRNA and the amino acid, as two things. So it's one thing, but two things stuck together. It's sort of like people coming to a party, and they come together as a couple. And so as it goes through into the machine rocks and oscillates as it does. So it's actually acting as an enzyme, but sort of a big, massive enzyme. And it sort of is okay to be this large scale because it's dealing with large scale. It's a little machine made out of Duplo, and it reads its message, its program, how to operate by Duplo. And what it does is that when it reads part of the code, the RNA code, which has been transformed, read off the DNA, and then selects the appropriate tRNA. So, orbiting around the outside of this machine is like a big play box of all the potential RNA molecules that it, or sorry, the transport RNAs that you could have. So essentially there's 24 or 64, depends how you look at it, transport RNAs molecules, and it says when it's read a piece of the mRNA, this machine is now activated only specifically for the type of tRNA read by the machine. Now, a lot of this is, you don't have to believe it at the moment, but a lot of it is powered by enzyme chemistry, quantum mechanics, molecules changing shape with ATP food coming in. So each time it does it, it's sort of like you know, if you put some batteries in a little toy, it starts to move. It's battery powered, but it's actually ATP powered. But furthermore, there's a lot of subtleties in it, and so this tRNA goes into the RNA as specified by the mRNA. So there's three different types of RNA going in there, and it does a special thing that it adds a amino acid, and as it does so, it then advances through the RNA code, so it moves on to the next letter, and so it blindly actually reads three letters at a time. At three letters at a time, it then for those three letters codes for a particular piece of amino acid and it links it together. Now, what I want to do this time is actually focus a little bit further in on the actual chemistry of what's happening with the tRNA and the RNA and the protein. So as it does this, laden tRNAs are selected. They disgorge their amino acid. The amino acid gets linked onto the back of the protein. It just chocks through and actually makes this long linear wormy of protein. And that protein is not, it's got the right chemicals, it's got not got the right shape, so what happens is that it's actually taken off and taken to a shaping forge, which may be forged together with another protein, folded around another protein. So an example of that would be insulin, where there's just two protons and the two proteins are taken off to a forge, and they're forged and bound into a little globular little thing, which is a insulin. And this insulin is an enzyme, and it actually regulates the amount of sugar in the body, and that's insulin. But I want to get back to you, so I'll see if we can just rewind. So in your head, I want you to have a line of RNA called mRNA, and that's going to be fed into a machine, little machine, which is when it receives cell power, will go click, 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 right, and blinding speed. So it's sort of, it doesn't get plugged in, it gets sprayed with special life juice. And so ATP, adenine triphosphate, is sort of the life juice, which when you sprinkle it onto RNA, it makes it chatter away. You can actually do things with it. And so what this does is you have, say, a selection of 20 or more tRNA hanging around, and it will go through and select the appropriate tRNA and disgorge it. So the tRNA is, you have the loaded and unloaded state. The loaded state has a a particular amino acid in it, and it also has a key in it, a three-letter key. So when the three-letter key comes in, a particular amino acid gets placed in and placed in the base. So there's so many little structures in the tRNA. There's the amino acid holder. Then there's also the key reading, the code reader. So it's like a number plate on it. And then there's also the actual chassis of it, which actually goes in and manipulates it. So it's quite a sophisticated little thing. Now, what happens is the way that these molecules go in and go out and how the keys read it is all done by molecular forces on the outside. And this rather elaborate hand-over-hand where the molecules get docked in. It's sort of like getting a tRNA in is like getting a canoe ashore into a small loading bay and you get supplies off it. So there's a bit of chemistry magic, quantum mechanical magic, which actually organises this to happen and selects the right tRNA to come in. So it can't obviously afford to do the energy, say if it's got one, it's got to very energy efficiently select the right one. It can't just keep on going through randomly waiting until it selects the one and then not doing it. So it might do two really quickly and then be really, really unlucky picking the next one. It's got to remove the luck, and the way it removes the luck is a little bit of quantum mechanics. And I couldn't tell you the exact process, but I've seen analogous processes in quantum mechanics where you have seen these fantastic cooling reactions where energy supported one area and basically it cools the molecule, so it stops it rotating, steadies it and brings it in. So if you like, you can heat a molecule by, say, if you imagine the boat giving it a push out to shore, and then you can cool it by actually bringing it in. So those processes come in. So what it essentially is that it reads the menu item and actually selects the tRNA to bring in the appropriate molecule. Now, what I want to do, the appropriate molecule of amino acid. So what I want to do is just talk a little bit about the chemical bonds on the tRNA and what and how it operates. So amino acids, as you could understand, is an amine, a carbon with a side chain, and an acid, amino acid. So amino is the base, ammonia base, carbon, which is the payload, and an acid. And you have an acid-base reaction to make a salt. So technically a protein is an organic salt, basically. And so it goes nitrogen, carbon with a side chain, carbon with an oxygen. So the carbon used to have two oxygens. So a carbolic acid is carbon with two oxygens attached to it. So oxygen is two bonds, but it's generally, one way to say about it, it's actually three bonds and a charge. That's one way, a negative charge, you know, or three bonds, a negative charge compensated by a proton in them. So what you have is that the acid thing is what we really want to concentrate. So at a certain point, we've got to nip a hydrogen off the amine and an OH off the acid so that we can stick an N to carbon with an oxygen gets stuck to an end going that way. Now it's important that this we actually see how this happens. So what happens is that I have a amino acid, and as far as I can see, I think the process of actually recycling a transport RNA. So the transport RNA is this sort of like a container in a supermarket where the goods, like an Aldi supermarket, the goods come in a container, you just stack the shelves, then the container goes out and you restack it. It's just a transport container. But in it. So that it's packing and unpacking. It unpacks an enzyme. It probably packs in an enzyme. There must be other enzymes out there which their only job is to actually pack tRNA up, you know, with the appropriate things. It does that. It's, you know, how else does it do it? Because it's actually quite a sophisticated thing about how it packs it up. So you get your amino acid, and you nick off. So you, at the end of your amino acid, you've got carbon, two oxygens, and a hydrogen. What happens is this enzyme nicks off the hydrogen and links it onto a carbon molecule within the tRNA. So the tRNA has within it a amino acid with the acid removed and the oxygen bond to a carbon. Now, the situation, you'll have to trust me, that of an oxygen bound to a carbon, which is bound to an oxygen, which is bound to another carbon, is called an ester. That's right, an ester. So it actually forms remarkably from an amino acid. It esterifies the acid. Now, the reason is that when it does this, it's got the acid locked in a particular position and orientation within the tRNA. Now, the way that it does that is that there are elements in the tRNA which spatially and attractively are folded in such a way that only the tRNA, which has got the code on the outside, has the appropriate spatial shaping on the inside. So this is how it selects the particular amino acid, by providing its environment that only allows the appropriate amino acid to be put in. And this is done with an accuracy every time, it'd be one in an accuracy of one in a trillion, something like that, this accuracy of this process. So your tRNA does several things. It forms an ester bond, and it has bonds around the outside which create it, meaning that only an amino acid can actually sit, of the right type, can sit snugly in there. And then what it does is that when that tRNA enters the RNA, it bends and stretches the so the hydrogen is sitting around the place, but it stretches the ester bond, exposing it to the hydrogen of the amino acid. So it stretches it and actually pops it right on to the end of the protein that's building. So it's this beautiful thing of actually grabbing it and actually physically stretching and pulling apart the oxygen off. And so the oxygen will take a hydrogen from inside and a hydrogen from the amine doing it. So the acid, the end of the molecules there. So it actually is this amazing thing. It's like this pair of hands actually grabbing the amino acid, grabbing an oxygen from the acid, pulling it apart and siling it right physically up to the amine, actually clicking it together. So it's actually a physically chain mechanism for it there. And so what happens is that this produces a protein. So you've got this rather complicated dance, that the proteins are necessary to make copies of the RNA. So they provide machines which open up the DNA, machines which actually get little base components, the four base components of the RNA, put it together, and it does that. And once it does that, the RNA is made up into basic machines, big fat machines, and those big fat machines go out in a process of one for the code, one for the machine, and one for the actual carrier to carry these tiny bits, because these machines are pretty big, right? So if you can imagine, they're pretty big, and there's these tiny little Lego blocks in the middle of them, which are the protein amino acids. And what happens is that this machine chunks through and makes the protein. So you have this sort of a circle, which is cognitive load wise pretty hard to explain, or not hard to explain, but it is beautiful in one sense, but it's also very hard to capture, because once the student, and it's really hard because you've got to actually almost explore what the cognitive load of the student is, how far you can take him in one time, because it's like these two circles. So the proteins, you've got to start somewhere, just say, look, the proteins will be explained later. So the proteins here, they come in, act on the DNA, make the RNA. The RNA comes to these big chunks together, and these the RNA then gets out, ready to read its code, but the RNA gets charged up with proteins which have been put into the tRNA by another enzyme protein process. So it's sort of like there's no way that the tRNA can just float around and actually pick up the appropriate amino acid just by itself. I'll just go away in a hole and just quietly say, oh, there's no point in me anymore. But so you've got to, so that's my way of saying that with everything you do, it's very rarely that you read it and understand it completely. You read it and you think you understand it, and you fill in the gaps. So one of the gaps I've filled in is that there must be some sort of protein enzyme necessary to handle the amino acid and put it in some way. This is the tRNA is just too much of a random process for it to go in. So that process, the protein makes the RNA. The RNA operates and makes the protein. So the protein helps the RNA make the RNA, and the RNA helps make the protein. That's sort of a circular thing. It's something that you can think about over and over over again. But for me, the critical thing is that act of grabbing the tRNA, grabbing the protein, amino acid, latching onto the acid and stretching the acid molecularly and actually presenting the nitrogen to the acid as a bond. It's sort of taking out all the randomness of it. And this is all important. Let's make no mistake about it in terms of this is all highly choreographed. It's not some of this random stuff where stuff's shaked in a chamber and you just keep on shaking it till it comes together. This has to be done to a budget. When I say I need a protein, say I need to make adrenaline, or having a store of adrenaline, I need it now. I can't wait around for 20 minutes or anything like that. And another giveaway sign is the actual range of temperature operation. So your random processes are often to a power of T, the rate at which it goes. These operate within a temperature range, which tells you enzymes, but they operate with the efficiency of an enzyme. So enzymes will operate within a particular temperature range. They do things very well, and that's how it's done. So just panning back out again, we've got yourself as a cell. The cell is making all of you, and the bits like the fat and the chemicals and the sort of groovy stuff, the chemicals which make you up, they're made by proteins. Then the proteins themselves are folded into structures and machines, and the proteins are the little machines which run the chemical reactions. Some of these chemical reactions which I run are chemical reactions to make the, or to machines which mechanically organize the production of RNA. And so RNA is this big machine cycle which actually produces these big, large machines which produce your proteins. The RNA machines are big, Duplo box size machines, and that they come together as these massive molecules, you know, like where a protein can get sort of, I don't know, 10 characteristics in this space of RNA's one characteristic. And so RNA is a big lumbering thing, but nonetheless it's very sophisticated. It's very sophisticated in that it can actually code a piece of an RNA machine, which is this, this ribosome. It's like a ribosome. It's a pretty incredible thing to see. If you could see in a cell, this would be a pretty amazing thing to see. Ribosome and the tRNA and the tRNA and the RNA come together, reading off the mRNA. But when it does, the tRNA and the RNA comes together and actually pulls apart the amino acid and snaps it on to the end of the protein. And eventually, when it says I've reached my end sequence, there must be something which reaches end sequence. It then just releases the protein, ready to build the next thing. So there you have it. That's my best explanation, and I'll put it forward to you. Thanks for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.